And welcome to No Direction, your number one source for Pathfinder news, reviews, and interviews. I'm Esther.
And I'm Navar.
Today, we are coming to you to talk about the revamped Monster Core, the remaster.
Yes. It looks good. It looks good.
Looks great.
Review over. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm very excited to see some monsters that they've updated and brought in from different books. Some of them got some new artwork, which I love. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is fun. And I mean, obviously new rules from the remaster to match a lot of stuff. So things like alignment being gone, holy and unholy being added. And yeah, some adjustments to some of the things. So yeah, before we get into it, there was another thing I wanted to talk about. So obviously, Pathfinder show, recently Dicebreaker put out an article about the comparing D&D and Pathfinder, which is, as anybody knows who's ever made this comparison to their friends or whatever, can sort of be a fraught and contentious thing to do. I do think Dicebreaker was mostly pretty fair about like their analysis of it. And they kind of try to like break it down of like, if you're a new player, this game might be better. If you're a GM who's looking for this thing, this game might be better, et cetera, et cetera. And I think just much like anything, as a person who loves and plays Pathfinder, I definitely feel like if you're coming in as a new player, Pathfinder is as easy or easier to learn. As we've talked about before, like obviously there's an abundance of choice and that might just take some more time in the beginning. But as you learn your character and grow it, it really doesn't matter in a bad way to have those choices. I think it just makes your character fit more. So whereas D&D characters sort of fit closer to archetypes, like playing, it's closer to PBTA rather, in that way. Obviously there's still more customization, but there's like, you're limited in your choices. So yeah, all that to say, thanks Dicebreaker, I guess, but also it's not as difficult as they made it seem, as Pathfinder people know. So if this is your first time listening to a Pathfinder show, just play it. It's going to be great. You're going to have a great time. You're going to have a lot of fun. You're going to make a badass character that's going to feel really good at first level. And they updated some of the monsters to make lower level monsters not as difficult to fight. So you get to feel even better now to tie that all in. So, yeah.
I feel like, really quickly, one of the things that gets leveled to Pathfinder a lot is that it's like so complex and so crunchy. And
yeah,
like, as we've said many times on this show, I think we both think it's less crunchy than many of the critics make it out to be. Yeah. But I would say, like, even if you start playing Pathfinder and you feel like, oh my God, I can't keep track of conditions and traits and all these things, like, you can still play the game without having a complete and total understanding of those things. And like,
yeah,
if you can make a character and you can roll some dice, you can play this game. And like, many of those things are important to the system, but mm-hmm, I don't think they are like necessary to fully understand at level one when you're first starting out. You'll get there. And my thing is just like, just have fun. Have fun building a character. Have fun telling a story with friends. Have fun rolling dice. That's what matters. And
yeah,
that's my pitch. Worry less about all the knock-on things. You'll get them. You'll get them. Just start.
Yeah. Yes, you will eventually have a plus 30 something to one of your rolls. I get that. But that feels really cool to roll a 50. So I don't know why you're complaining. No, but yeah, genuinely, I get it. I agree. We're on board. We're on the same page.
So, I guess in other quick news before we start, I built a kineticist for the first time as an opponent for my party coming up in a big boss fight.
Yeah.
The kineticist is so badass.
Yeah.
I am so into this build. I was just like experimenting all over the place and it was a lot of fun. So if you haven't built a kineticist yet, have fun with that.
Have you used it in a fight yet?
Well, I was doing rolls on my own in Foundry and like with my own dice, but we have not had combat yet.
Yeah, you gotta update us after that.
I will.
It's so fun. Like, I think that's one great thing, making enemies, NPCs that are just a full-on character sheet is so fun. I mean, I think my first big NPC that I made that to fight was a spy that was a monk. And monks are so good because literally you could just teleport across the room to hit somebody and it doesn't get much better than that. And then throw them. And these are all like just things you can do in your action economy. So yeah, Kinesis is one I really want to mess with and dig into because it seems like a really fun class. I'm going over that book. It just makes me want to try it out. So.
Well, I will keep us updated on what happens in this fight, the cool moves I get to use, assuming I get to use them. Maybe they'll like knock me out and I'll come in last in initiative and I'll never get to fight. We'll see. But yeah. I hope I get to deal some cool damage before I go down.
Heck yeah. Well, cool. Let's dive into this. So
let's dive in. Yeah.
Monster Core. Yeah. As mentioned, a lot of things were updated. Certain rules to make sense, obviously to get away from the OGL and to fit into the ORC have been changed. Lots of the ways that things were phrased before, spells, things like that. So I think we should just start with dragons because that's,
you know, I want to start there.
Yeah. That's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for. And I mean, dragons are so cool. They're amazing. Mm-hmm. I love them. Mm-hmm. I guess to start, I'm curious, like, what your thoughts about dragons as they were designed previously and, like, as the lore kind of treated them previously. Like, what was your relationship to that?
I think, so there's the aspect of, like, a kid who grew up and watched every dragon movie available, even the bad ones. I love dragons. And I think anytime I was running a game, I was always, like, fitting a dragon into the campaign because it's like that's what we're here for, right? So yes, I love them. I do think that though I'm on the same page as Luis recently said, I think it was on Alt Haven show, shout out to them, that the way that dragons were written before was boring. It was the only thing that was different about them was like, are you good or evil and what's your breath weapon? And I agree with that. I mean, there are certain things you could do if you get really creative, but the way that they're written and like to just pick them up and put them in a campaign, if you're a person that doesn't want to have to do a bunch of homebrew or too big of a deep dive, they were pretty boring in that sense. You know, they have a lot of hit points and that is what it is. But I think now having these situations where they're built not around whether they're good or evil, but having these different things like a conspirator dragon and diabolic dragons and having like distinct abilities and distinct drives and distinct characteristics makes it very exciting. And new artwork. Yeah, I'm on board for that. So,
yeah. So like, Chromythica deals with a lot of like dragon lore. And one of the things that I really wanted to kind of critically consider going into making the show was this like division between chromatic and metallic and these firm lines of like good and evil, which I too found very boring and constraining and just honestly kind of like a bummer. Like you're locked into being one thing forever just because you're a certain color of dragon. That seems like really basic like it's been done and it can be done in more imaginative and freeing ways. So yeah, I'm really excited to talk about the new dragons, which are, there's a lot to say, I guess. So we kind of know that they are grouped in some ways by the new ways of thinking about magic: arcane, divine, occult, primal.
Do you have a favorite off the bat?
Well, one of my favorite dragons is a horned dragon, but I think the Mirage dragon is really cool. Yeah. So like, I'm going to go with Mirage, but I love all of them.
Yeah.
Find it actually. I'm going to open it up.
They're all, I know. The Fortune dragon is really fun.
The Fortune dragon is really fun. So yeah.
I love the artwork for it too. Where it's like its body's like dipped in gold and it's like wearing all of this jewelry, essentially, things that it's taken. Yeah.
Yeah. So the new kinds of dragons, I know this was somewhat announced before this review, but we'll get into it. They're Adamantine, Conspirator, Diabolic, Imperial, Fortune, Horned, Mirage, and Omen. And they all have kind of different specialties and different things they're about. And you can be like a horned dragon and sort of part of a larger group of dragon families, like Esoteric, Regal, Outer, and Sky Metal. And each dragon family kind of has different values and different ways they roll, I guess.
Yeah, and now with the way that they've changed the schools of magic, it has also like altered how dragons relate to magic as well. So like the horned dragon being a primal dragon, which I love it. I just love the way that these... I think this is a really fun, I know like this is a big focus from Luis too. It seems like this is a really fun way to like redesign them and think about them again and to come away with something that feels better, not only for the gameplay, but also I think for the lore of Galarian, and that fits tighter into that space.
Totally.
I just noticed too, I'm sorry, I'm just looking at this adult fortune dragon and it literally has swords through its lips as like piercings. And that's so rad.
Which is so cool. Like dragons liking piercings, having them. I love it. Yes. I love it so much.
Sorry, which one did you say was your favorite?
I'm going with Mirage Dragon off the bat, but that may change over time.
Yeah. So what is it about the Mirage Dragon?
I just think that this idea of like illusions and like a dragon being motivated by the love of things and like power, but also like kind of wielding that in a different way. And like the example, I think the name of the dragon is Dijansi, and they're in Jalmare, and they created like this illusory village's entertainment, which then draws curious travelers. And the dragon is like, hey, would you just go along with this? And now they use the village to like draw in more riches and more attention. I think that's so fascinating and such a like a cool new way to interpret kind of draconic lore and the vibes of like what being a dragon can mean.
Yeah, that's like that very like specific trope that I've seen a few times of like the ringleader of like a menagerie, that's like their obsession is the circus, and they're like their whole drive is like putting on the best traveling show, but that person is a dragon, and I think that's very fun.
Oh, it's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. And I'm just like, as with dragons before, each dragon has like a breath weapon or ability that does something cool. Yeah. So this dragon has a hallucinatory breath, which it breathes a cloud that deals 76 mental damage in a 30-foot cone. I just love that as like the flavor of it. And I think that's a perfect complement to this like idea of a mirage and like creating a mirage and how that can be weaponized.
I think so too, like how you can tie some of this stuff into different classes or into like how your character would work. You know, if you're looking at them sort of as a patron, right? Like the Omen Dragon, I think obviously fits so well into oracles and witches. And I just really, I want to play a witch that has a patron as an Omen Dragon, because I think that'd be incredible. Like just to play with fate and have, you know, these like visions of the future and things like that, like, and tap into that occult magic style. It really is. It's peak design. That's all I got to say. Also too, I think like in a lot of ways, some of this art has sort of turned away from only having like very specifically Western dragon styles. Like the Omen Dragon specifically has like antlers, and it just looks so good. Shout out to the artists who did these, because they're incredible.
They all look amazing. I wanted to shout out the horned dragon for a minute, because when I opened to this page, I screamed when I saw the example of who the horned dragon is. Folks may know that Athervox is my favorite dragon in the Pathfinder universe. Yeah. And so when I saw adult horned dragon example Athervox, I was like, just so excited. And I love that. I love that she's given specifically as an example of the way that like a classic dragon, she was a green dragon, can be easily reimagined and translated into this system. And
yeah,
I think that's a fantastic example. And like, you know, if you have a fave, pick your fave dragon from Galarian and then go through this list and figure out like kind of where you think they would fit in and go with that. So yeah, I think it's really fun to figure out like who would fit where.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it too, like if you're a person who enjoys making your own monsters or like, or maybe you were making your own specific dragons before, I think like the toolkit now to go in and make a new dragon seems like just a lot of fun with all of the different things that you can add and the different aspects of it. And even just like going down there, like how they have like, I mean, they've got spells, they have very specific like things that they can do with their body in terms of like bites and draconic frenzies, things like that. So, or as well, if you're playing a summoner and your summon is a dragon, now you've got some other fun things as well. So the options are just so good. It's so juicy and I love it.
It's very good. I really can't say enough about the new breath weapons. Like the adamantine dragon's breath weapon is an avalanche where boulders come out. And like, I love that it's kind of geared towards like the theme of the type of dragon they are. And just the idea of a dragon breathing rocks is so fantastic to me. So much fun. Yeah.
There's one thing that I really love about Pathfinder is in that because dragons are great and you should fight a dragon in every campaign, or even if you don't fight it, you should encounter a dragon in every campaign. The setup of almost like the Pokemon evolution, right? Of like, there are also drakes that exist that are also really cool. I really enjoy as low level encounters to have like, it's almost a dragon and you're sort of getting closer to that, because I think drakes are just fun and I'm excited that they're still here.
I am too. I made a note about them, and then I made a note about the dragonette, which I don't know if that was the house drake before, but oh my God, it's precious. So cute.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to find the page number right now.
I know. The jungle drake is really good too. The jungle drake has like this very like arrow-shaped face. The way that they've drawn it, even though it is very reptilian, also gives me cat vibes. So I like that.
I love
that. The dragonette is on page 127.
127, the fey dragonette. That's right. Maybe this was a fairy dragon before. Oh my God, it's so precious.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And
now that you say that, yeah.
I love their euphoric breath. It breathes euphoric gas in a 15-foot cone, and you got to succeed a DC 18 fortitude save or become stupefied 2 and slowed 1 for 1d4 rounds. How precious. Like, what a little punch it packs.
Yep.
As a creature 2.
Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. So what else we got here? They made some other changes. Obviously, with the changes that come with, like, moving away from good and evil, you have the holy and unholy. And so some of the demons, angels, and archons have changed as well a little bit. I was telling you before we got on how a lot of the archons now have more of like the biblical angel appearance of just being bizarre and having too many faces and eyes, which is a lot of fun. It's just fun, like thinking of if you're going to deal with something celestial, I think it should be weird and not just be a humanoid. And that's my opinion. Just be like so like incomprehensible in the same way like Eldritch Horror should be incomprehensible. I remember reading in, I think it's like the Handler's Guide for Delta Green. They talk about this. There's one creature that's just like the way they describe it. I'm like, I try to find a picture of it and it's just like a thing. You can't comprehend it. And I think I enjoy the idea of like having things that are just being like, how do I describe this to somebody? If I was just like, yeah, I actually went up to Elysium or whatever and ran into this thing. What was it? It was an archon. What did it look like? look like swirling rings with lots of eyes and some wings on it. And it just sort of suspended in air. It was a dog and it had four faces and antlers. And I'm not sure what happened to me. I think that should be your experience walking out of there. So
agreed. I know, like, in the Christian testaments, there's often this, like, angelic beings will preface their visits with "fear not." And mm-hmm. I'm always like, there's got to be a reason for that. Like, the first thing they say is like, don't be afraid. I swear yeah. I'm here with good news. And I'm like, what kind of a being, what must this being kind of look like to just show mm-hmm. up and be like, okay, hey, calm
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
I'm cool. Yeah.
That always reminds me of that, like, cartoon meme that somebody made where it's like, fear not. And the person's like, okay. And they're like, okay, have more fear than that, actually. I need you to have more fear. Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. Speaking of religion, one of the things that has come up quite a bit in sort of discussion around the Monster Core is that golems don't exist anymore. And so I thought we could talk about that. I am not Jewish, but I've listened to people smarter than me in this subject talk about this very specific thing. And I'm curious if you have thoughts about this, but yeah, golems are one of those things that just is a problematic monster for some people and has been since renamed. Yeah. I don't know if you have like your own specific thoughts about this, but I just want to like point this out as there is a very specific reason about it. It's because it was problematic and multiple people who are very smart have pointed it out before, not only to Paizo, but also to WotC, and I think to anybody who probably creates golems in their game. There are certain cultural myths, mythologies, monsters, things like that that should just be left alone. We see this a lot in American indigenous culture. There are things that they just ask us to stop talking about. And for some reason, people continue to talk about them. But yeah, I think the reason that there are no more golems is for that specifically. I don't have enough education on all the details to like go on a whole thing about it, but I do know enough to know that it should be changed and we should be respectful of people's cultures. So
yeah, I think that's a really good summary of it. And like, I am not an expert in the folklore and the mythology and the like Talmudic scholarship around golems, yeah. but I did write a paper that involved them in graduate school and I know a little bit. You know, holding forth on any subject related to Jewishness and Judaism, there's yeah. automatically going to be like seven different opinions that are not necessarily even like everybody else is wrong. They're just like coming together. So I say that to say, yeah. you know, if you're listening to this and you disagree, amazing. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it is a very specific kind of story and a very specific kind of creature that appears throughout Jewish history. And there's a lot of like specificity there that
yeah.
if you introduce a golem as a more general creature, that specificity gets lost and that can be mm-hmm. really hurtful. And like, there are certain things I know that like different Jewish people may have different perspectives on whether you need to leave golems alone entirely or you can incorporate them. There's some cool TTRPGs that I have that involve golems being present, or like one is a specifically a game written by a Jewish designer where you like play as a golem. So some people are cool with that. And some people might be like, no, we leave this alone entirely. And I think it's a really wise move and a care-filled move on Paizo's part to be like,
yeah,
we're actually going to do this more precisely. We're going to like be more precise about what we mean when we talk about this kind of a creature. And we're going to like think, is there something that we can pull from that's more in our lane to pull from? And I think we need more of that everywhere. Like, one of the things I did notice is that they've included Dybbuks. And I don't remember if Dybbuks were a thing before, but that's on page 136. And this is another mm-hmm. kind of creature that appears often in like Jewish folklore, are these kind of beings that can mess with you and can like take the appearance of a particular person and do so to kind of like bring chaos into one's life. And it was cool to see that and to see it represented in a way that I was like, oh, this feels like both accurate to the culture it's drawing from and like it belongs in the world of Galarian. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. So yeah, it might be a little bit more difficult to find the thing that used to be golems in your Monster Corps book, but it's for a good reason. So I'm glad we touched on that. I mean, yeah. And you see other things too, like genies, which has been addressed already through Impossible Lands, I believe. We got some fun stuff. Ghouls. Ghouls are fun. So this kind of brings me to, we'll talk about ghouls first. And then there's another like sort of pet peeve of mine personally with the framing of this book that isn't a knock necessarily on Paizo, but just the way that we use words I want to talk about. But ghouls are less zombie and more anything. Is you could just be a walk around and just, I'm just a walk around ghoul in your community. But you still have to eat flesh. So there's that. I think that this was added in Book of the Dead, was it not? As an option for players to take on. So if I'm correct, which I think that I am, I think that's a good update to change that because, yeah, I mean, if it's, this is going into my other point, but I think if you're going to give it as an option and make it just like a normal thing, then I think it should just be that way represented. I think in the same way that like one of the other things I know that was brought up was gnolls no longer being monsters in here and are now called something with a K, I want to say like a Crollo or something like that. I will find it. But I play a gnoll in my Strength of Thousands campaign. And I actually love the way a Crollo is what it is, K-H-O-L-O. And I'm not a big fan of, I think when I originally read it, when I, in 5e, gnolls, I was like, oh, okay, like this is an interesting concept and the way that they're like created and it's like very like just vile and awful. Like if you played Baldur's Gate 3, you know, you have an idea. And then I read the way that gnolls were written by Black people, specifically when it came to Into the Motherlands and Into the Mwenge Expanse. And I was like, oh, actually, this is much better. And I really enjoy the way that this is written and they're nuanced. And I'm a huge fan of gnolls. And so I'm happy to see that change and not them just be like in the Monster Core book represented in only one specific way. But I still have a problem. My problem with Monster Core or Bestiary or Monster Manual is that you're using a very specific framing of language, monster or beast. And in this book, you also have gnolls, goblins, I think elves, you know what I mean? Like
gnomes. I'm literally looking at the elf gnomes, and gnome pages. Yeah. And not humans.
Yeah. And I've said this before, Paizo's not going to change it. I'm not like, that's not like this again. This is not me like calling them down. I do think though that there should be a discussion about the way that we frame things when we talk about monsters. And I know that the fix here is to make an NPC manual. And I understand that that's a whole other book and, or, you know, whatever. Like, I understand that there are printing complications around this idea, but in a game that has much of the design intention around fighting things, and in a culture where monster is ubiquitous with the thing we fight, putting things that are also just civilians in your world in the Monster Core book, I think has its own sort of inherent implications. Yeah. So that's kind of my thought. It's a little bit of a pet peeve. I understand the efficiency of the page and, you know, putting this in a place where it's, and treating it sort of like an NPC gallery, like a generalized NPC gallery. I get that. But I do think that there is something that we're telling people when we give them this. When I say like, hey, go make an encounter, use this book. And they're like, oh, okay, well, I'll just, you're going to fight 10 gnomes. Why? Because they're bandits or something. I don't know. This is not me like trying to put like a bunch of responsibility on Paizo or any other person, but I do think that like, I feel like there is a discussion that could be had about this. I've thought about this for a long time. I think I've talked about this on, if not Secret Nerd Podcast, for sure another podcast, maybe Three Black Halflings. And yeah, it's just an interesting thing that I noticed that we continue to do in fantasy games and makes me wonder sometimes. I also read an article today on Rascal News about this very thing. So probably isn't going to help my like framing of this because it's very present in my mind. All that to say, the artwork's still cool. I'm glad that things have nuance in this book. But you also did call everything in here a monster. So I don't know. Looking at kobolds now, a playable ancestry.
I love that you brought this up. I got to read this article on Rascal. I'm going to go there after we finish recording because monstrosity and like what monstrosity means and how we construct it is an interest of mine, you could say, especially as a queer person, a disabled person. I think we could have an industry-wide conversation about this, quite frankly. So it's not just Paizo that I'm like putting in my sights here. And this is like a loving conversation on my part. Like I really want to talk about it and think through it. But yeah, putting the name Monster Core on this. And then I opened it and I was like, I wonder if they give a definition of what a monster is. Mm. And on page 5, which is like the introduction starts, what you see is playing creatures, reading creature statistics, creature name. And it's really interesting, this framing of creature in the introduction versus monster on the cover. And I wonder if we had called this like the creature guide, like the creature manual, the creature core. For me, like that's an important, subtle, but important linguistic difference. Because if we're calling, you know, all of these playable ancestries monsters, what does that suggest? But also, what does it suggest about all of these other creatures that have like sentience and lives of their own to call them a monster? Like, just the question, what does it mean to be a monster is fascinating to me. I feel like I could write a PhD thesis on that. Yeah. So I don't know how far I'm getting tonight, but.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I think like even we just talked about like the dragons and how like incredible they are in nuance and like, and I fully agree, like everybody should encounter a dragon. I don't think you always have to fight a thing. And I don't think you have to fight necessarily a lot of this stuff that's in this book. But I will say too, even you brought up the fact that there aren't humans in it. And even the word creature in itself, when you're, how can I put this? I think that Galarian, as it is set up now, does a good job of not making specific groups of ancestries feel like marginalized people. Mm. However, I do know that marginalized people gravitate towards specific ancestries because there's something there that feels relatable to them as a marginalized person. So if you are talking about these groups of people that you've put into the Monster Corps and calling them creatures and those groups of people being relatable to marginalized people, I think that there's like, there is like, even if creature is a subtle difference over monster, there is also still an interesting aspect to that whole framing that I agree with, like you said, there is an industry-wide conversation to be had about this whole thing. Again, I'm not trying to like beat up Paizo about this. I do think that I think this is very much maybe even an industry standard, something that's sort of been like a holdover for a long time. My first gripe about it was the fact that drow are in there, and drow have a very deep connection, I think, to a lot of marginalized people. So that, and this was from when I first talked about this, when this first came to my mind in previous books. Yeah. I think that it's just an interesting thing. Monster Core sells the book, right? It's the things that But again, it's the things that you get to encounter and fight. And yes, you are going to encounter and fight NPCs. That's part of the game as well. But it is very interesting. And it is very interesting when you start talking about, like, what is monster. I always go back to my friends at Transplanar and their discussions around, like, monstrosity and queer monstrosity. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a lot of important conversations in here in, like, sort of the nuance of what's been presented to us as the title of a book. I don't know. I think people should think about it. I think we should really think about it, about what it means to put something in your encounter and not just assume that the quote unquote monster should just be fought. So
I really love that you bring up that point about creature too, because as I was saying it, I was like, it's a subtle difference. And I'm not sure that I would really love being called that. Dehumanization is, like, not the right word here when I'm talking about a lot of beings that aren't human, but it's the closest I can get. It's like, it's dehumanizing. It's it's a lack of dignity. It's a lack of, like, respect and a lack of, just all of those qualities that I want to give, like, sentient beings, even if they're sentient beings doing terrible things. And I think that's a really important piece of the conversation, is, like, how are we constructing monstrosity? How are we constructing the beings that inherently matter in these worlds versus the beings that were like, I'm okay mowing through them.
Yeah.
That's up in us and a them. And I got to make everything deep, unfortunately. And this is one of those things that I think, again, it's not just Paizo. It's an industry-wide conversation. It's a how we imagine other worlds conversation, how we imagine our own world conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. That, I think
we do need to be talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, like, to give some credit where credit is due, while obviously the roots of what Pathfinder is comes from wargaming, Pathfinder 2nd edition especially has a lot of, when you talk about, like, your ancestry feats and your general feats, you have a lot of options you can use to work things out in a way that isn't physical violence. And the monsters do too. I say monster and now I'm going to talk about kobolds, but, like, I'm just looking at kobold cavern mages, which is a very cool concept, by the way. Kobolds don't just they don't just evolve sort of from dragons anymore. They can do it from any sort of powerful being, like a kobold cavern mage. It has a deception skill, a diplomacy skill, intimidation skill. It can speak multiple languages, and it's got intelligence and wisdom. So it's like, this doesn't have to be a fight. A lot of the things that are built into this game are for fighting. I am very aware of this, but If we're making the consent that we're playing this game that has a lot of fighting, that we're expecting to fight a lot of stuff, but there are also ways that we don't have to do that specifically, and there are options to move past that, and there are mechanics that support us moving past that, then I'm happy that there are these other options in here. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Next is a Kraken, and I don't think you're gonna talk down a Kraken, so
but
you're just gonna have to fight that monster.
Can you flirt down a Kraken?
Can you flirt down a Kraken? I don't know. Can you beat a 32 intimidation, plus 32 ability modifier? Can you speak Thalassic? Maybe not.
You know, that's another Esther line of conversation,
right?
Yeah,
and
I don't, you know. I deeply relate to the fun of, like, I just want to fight something. I just want to have a combat sometimes. And I think it's perfectly okay to do that. And we can hold, like, I'm going to be conscious of what this means that I'm doing this at the same time. I'm just going to hold, like, multiple truths about it at once.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's like, the exploration of, like, why we enjoy playing violent games is a whole other thing, but I wrote a game about zombie apocalypse where, like, you literally get to fight zombies. Now, I can't force you to deal with the violence in character and how that makes your character feel, but there are things in there that support that. But ultimately, once it's out of my hands and into the player's hands and the GM's hands, that's the game you're playing. I think that's, you know, we all have our own responsibility and capacity to deal with how we interface with a lot of this stuff. But I think as designers, what we can do is give options and give supporting mechanics if our intention is to be more than just, you know, shoot a fireball at a thing. So, yeah. If you're looking at it like in that way of like, here are things you can encounter, and options of how that encounter can go based on your interaction, then I think, yeah, it makes it a little bit, I think it's a clearer direction to look at it. If you're reading Monster Court and you go, here's monsters I can fight, and then I think you'll get what you expect out of that. So, but there's some cool monsters in here.
There are. Any other ones that particularly stand out?
Yeah, there was one I was looking at and then I walked away from it. And we might have already talked about it. Oh, no, we didn't. Harpies. So the harpy in the book is really cool. The harpy in the book has a masculine body, which I find interesting because I think every depiction of a harpy up to this point has always been a female body. And I could not tell you why, other than that was a design choice that continued to be perpetuated. But I enjoy the fact that they moved away from this. Also, this harpy looks like the monster from Death Note. And I think that's just fun design. So, but yeah, I think there's some other things that I've heard mentioned as well, where they've sort of adjusted the typical gender presentation. And I mean, you and I, we've talked about this since we've started talking about Pathfinder books. So it's really no surprise, but I still enjoy seeing it when it pops up.
This is great art. I am there now. Yeah. I love it. It's funny. The two things I was drawn to in this book were dragons, of the dragons, the elemental scamps, which are like...
Yes, the scamps are so cute.
The scamps are so cute. You know, they are like adorable bat-like creatures that are embodying air, earth, fire, water. Really adorable. Good update. I think if you were a fan of the elemental scamps before, you will be a fan of these.
I think, were they not mephits before?
They were mephits, yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, very much a fun little changes there. I just want to see if there's anything else. I mean, yeah, these are just fun. It is so funny, too, that there's just like random animals, just hyena, dolphin in here.
Yeah, eagle.
Eagle. Yeah. Colo. I feel like I need to look more into the Colo because I feel like as a Null, that's one of your ancestry options or heritage options. And that it's weird that it's the only Null representation. We're getting into like the specifics of how things are done. The Manticore art is incredible on page 228. It seems fun to fight a Manticore. Yeah. I love the Naga. The Naga is another one that's like has received updates through Impossible Lands. I feel like there's probably going to be something in Tiantra about Nagas as well. But even that, if you go to page 236, it's a whole different artwork and really cool to get away from just like a pretty lady with a big snake body.
Yes. Very cool. I found one of the most horrifying monsters from my first edition days, the Nuckalavy, which is like, it's on page 243. It's super gross. It's like this flesh of horse creature and personoid, humanoid body. I remember not wanting to meet one of those. Great art, though, as always.
It is great art, yeah. There's so many cool things. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like, should you get this book? I am going to look right now, but I think the great thing about Pathfinder books, Paizo books really, is that all the rules are free.
Yes.
And because monsters, I'm hanging myself up on this, but monsters are basically all rule. Yeah, you can just get the, you can just go find the information. So I don't know, I don't think Archives of Nethys has been updated yet. Doesn't look like. I'm like, I just looked up Scamp and I'm not seeing the Scamps yet. But I imagine it won't be too long. So all that to say, I think if you enjoy having that physical of like, I want to find all these monsters and I don't want to have to like save pages on my computer, then yeah, it's beautiful artwork. I love the redesign of all of the new books. I think it'd be a fun thing to turn pages on and just like read when you're just like hanging out and like not actively in doing campaign stuff, but just like in prep or whatever. I think it'd be a great book to go through, and seems like a good addition to the collection. 100%.
Agreed. My thought in flipping through this was, so listeners of the show will not be surprised that I do not keep in my brain like the granular details of many entries of like a creature entry, stats, like spell blocks. It doesn't stay in my brain. So I was flipping through and trying to be like, okay, other than the dragons, other than the scamps, other than like some big things I know are different, like what is new and what is not? And I was like, I'm sure I could look this up, but in my brain, I don't remember. So I had a lot of fun thumbing through the book and like before I got the book, looking through the PDF. And I did have that response of like, when it's up on Archives of Nethys, I can just type into my search, find an entry there, get what I'm looking for really quickly. So what I also want to say is I am super excited about the Orc license, super excited about the remasters. And also I'm looking forward to some material that's a little bit less of a retread and a little bit newer, which is we've got some really exciting stuff in the pipeline in the next couple months. And I found myself like kind of in that place after reading this book, which is not a knock on the book, just saying. So yeah, I think I agree. I think it's a really fun thing to thumb through. I think if you're a person who like wants the complete collection, worth investing in, but it's not one that I'd say like, oh, you really gotta have the Monster Core physical copy. Go for it. Go for it if you want it, but it'll make its way to the internet soon.
Yeah. I mean, before being an official Pathfinder book reviewer, right, I had most of the books, and the ones that I was like, okay, I could not get this one and be okay was the bestiary books. So, and it's because their rules are there. So, but also having the books is nice. So there's that.
Yeah.
Also this book has a pipe fox in it, which I just found. And, if you don't know what that is, it's just a little snake body with the fox head and it looks incredible. So I don't know what I'm gonna do with this thing. I want it to be my familiar. I think that's what I'll just be doing moving forward, is just having pipe fox familiars. So page 265.
Amazing.
But yes, all that to say, despite everything that we've brought up and all the difficult things, I love this. And I'm excited to have little creatures in my pocket for the next campaign. And yeah, and just to like dig in and appreciate some of this artwork and this creature design and the way that it fits into the new remaster. I haven't had to deal with a lot of the remaster rules yet. And Unwavering Force, I think we're saving it right now. But I love the way that it has, I love the direction it's going. And I'm excited to see as it continues and to dig into the future books that come out and how that all is going to fit in together. So
same. I am extremely excited to get to hopefully review the Tian Sha World Guide and Howl of the Wild for you all soon. I'm so ready for both of those books.
Yeah, those are going to be some big episodes.
Maybe a series for both.
Maybe a series. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, Tian Cha has so many writers on it. So many people that I would love to talk to. Not for the first time for me, but just in general, again, about what was written and how the wild, for super obvious reasons. It's just going to be great. So yeah, we're going to have a field day with those ones. So buckle up, buttercups. And my goodness, the more I just like, as I'm talking and trying to outro this, I just keep scrolling through the most horrific monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't ever want to see this thing.
And like, amazing art.
Quellant. Yeah. Quellant. On page 285, if you want to have some nightmare fuel, go to page 285. Anyway, so yeah, that's it. I forget. Do we do a little outro?
Yeah.
Introduction.
Yeah. Do you have anything you want to plug?
I do. So yeah, this is not Pathfinder related, but over on Secret Nerd Podcast, I have been running a 10-part series of the game that I designed called The Corrupted. So if you are interested in dramatic storytelling about three strangers come together in the apocalypse, fighting for their lives and survival and for each other, go listen to Ties That Bind. The finale comes out on, I was going to say Monday, but that means nothing to you, listener. On the finale will be out by the time you listen to this episode, so you can binge all 10 episodes and all of our talkback episodes as well, if that is your thing. It was an incredible project to be a part of. We do a ton of post-production, and it's really good. I don't know. I don't want to oversell it. I promise you, just listen to the first 10 minutes of the first episode. And if you're not bought in by then maybe it's not for you. But I think it is for you. So anyway, Secret Nerd Podcast, Secret NRD Social. You can find me wherever on social media at Navar SNP. That's N-A-V-A-A-R S-N-P.
Amazing. And yeah, you all know to find me everywhere at Dungeon Minister, and more importantly, to find No Direction at No Direction on Twitter, Mastodon, YouTube, Blue Sky, and to visit our Discord server if you haven't already, where we talk about Pathfinder 2E, Pathfinder 1E, lots of other TTRPGs, and honestly, whatever you want to talk about in the general chat channel. So yeah, come check out the Discord server. We would love to talk to you there. And yeah, I think that takes us to, until next time, this has been No Direction.